This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Alzheimer's disease. It's an irreversible, progressive brain disease that slowly destroys memory and thinking skills, and eventually even the ability to carry out the simplest tasks. In most people with Alzheimer's, symptoms first appear after the age of 65. Estimates vary, but experts suggest that as many as 5 million Americans age 65 and older may have Alzheimer's disease. And here with more about a new study to treat this challenging disease is Dr. Amy Sanders. She's Assistant Professor of Neurology and Director of Cognitive and Behavioral Neurology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Sanders. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So the number of patients with Alzheimer's is growing, and I read somewhere that it's projected to hit some real peaks in the next several years. Why is that?
A lot of it has to do with the baby boomer generation, which is now crossing over more and more into what we think of as the golden or retirement years. And that's a big population bulge. That's one thing. More people are attaining retirement age. And secondly, the things that used to kill people before they would get to old age, we've actually gotten pretty good at treating so that if they don't kill you, they become just chronic diseases. Things like cancer, heart disease, diabetes. So a lot of the things that once upon a time might have caused mortality before the age of 65 or even in the young elder years, sort of in the 70s, now does not cause mortality, and people live long enough to develop the signs and symptoms of Alzheimer's disease or some other dementia.
So it's the most common form of dementia, but it's not the only one. So can you help us understand this distinction?
That's correct, sure. So dementia itself is just a syndrome. It's a collection of symptoms. That's the definition of the word syndrome. And in dementia, what we look for is that people have an actual quantitative impairment in more than one type of thinking. So that presupposes that they've had some sort of actual formal evaluation where their various types of thinking skills have been assessed and quantified, and they have had problems in more than one.
So things like memory or reasoning.
Memory, attention, language, what we call executive function, or you might call reasoning, abstract reasoning, problem-solving skills, and also then how to manipulate visual-spatial information. Those are the five main areas that we assess. And if somebody has problems in more than one type of thinking, and they also have gradual decline in their functional abilities, their abilities to take care of themselves at their normal level of caring for themselves. So things like balancing a checkbook, planning a complicated vacation, traveling to a new place that they've never been to before and figuring out how to get from point A to point B. If they begin to have trouble in these sorts of areas and they have the required sorts of thinking impairments, then we can say that they meet criteria for dementia.
Dementia, but that's where this synonymous concept of it doesn't necessarily mean Alzheimer's.
Correct. Alzheimer's is one of the diseases that can cause dementia. It's the most common. You mentioned before a powerful statistic, sort of at the other end of the statistical spectrum. I think the Alzheimer's Association estimates that one person every 12 seconds or so is going to develop dementia in the United States. So very, very common, increasingly common. And Alzheimer's disease is the most common disease that causes the dementia syndrome.
So does it require certain findings for us to know that this is truly Alzheimer's as opposed to some other dementia? And if so, is it important, I guess, is the question to know.
So I'll answer your first question first. So it has always been true, and they taught me in medical school, that in order to be definite about the diagnosis, it requires actual brain tissue. So for most people, that means some sort of post-mortem or after-death analysis. We wait until the person has finished using their brain, and then we cut it up and look at it under a microscope and determine whether, in fact, the diagnosis that was made when the person was alive is, in fact, correct. Was it truly Alzheimer's disease? Was it Alzheimer's disease only? The older people get, the more common is the pattern of having more than one disease contributing to the dementia.
Oh, that's very interesting. That's something I've never heard said before. Mm-hmm. So there can be multiple causes.
Multiple types. Usually
simultaneously.
Simultaneously, right. And the four main diseases that can cause dementia are Alzheimer's disease, what we call dementia with Lewy bodies, which is a very particular variation on Parkinson's disease, vascular dementia, which is means that the dementia is caused by multiple strokes, and something called frontotemporal lobar degeneration, which is a primarily behavioral and personality affecting dementia that usually begins at a much younger age. It's the rarest of the four dementing syndromes.
So going back to this idea of the second part of the question, how important is it then if you would need to wait largely for a postmortem to have a definitive diagnosis of Alzheimer's, how important is it to know that Alzheimer's is the causation of your dementia?
So I think it's important for one thing. It's just important sometimes to be able to put the correct name to what's going on. That's important. There are certain treatments that we use for Alzheimer's disease that either don't work or are actually deleterious in other types of dementia. So the medications that we use for Alzheimer's disease can actually be problematic if somebody has frontotemporal dementia. Or if we give them to somebody with vascular dementia, we're probably giving them a medication that's not going to do any good, yet may cause side effects. So it's important to be able to put a name on the disease for that reason. Also, each of the dementia syndromes progresses in its own way and has its own characteristic features. So in order for me to be able to counsel patients and their families and caregivers about what to expect, even though any dementing disease is going to affect any given individual in a highly particular way, certain generalities do still apply. So for Alzheimer's disease in particular, we expect that short-term memory will be affected first. And then as the middle stage of the disease arrives, people may develop some behavioral issues. They may become agitated. They may have hallucinations. They may have delusions. That's very common in the middle stage of Alzheimer's disease, even though in something like dementia with Lewy bodies, it's one of the foundational components of the diagnosis and would have to be there earlier.
So basically these observations leading to a diagnosis are crucial in terms of treatment protocol and the ability to manage the patient.
I believe so, yes, absolutely.
So I guess the question I have, and I've always asked in my own mind, and I love the fact that I have an expert here to answer this, is with people living longer now, is dementia just going to be simply a necessary outcome of old age?
So there is this idea that if you live long enough, you'll eventually get demented. And I don't believe that's true, or the live long enough really means that you'd have to be 115 or 120 years, and we don't have enough people who live to that kind of a great age for us to really be able to answer this question. But I will say this, memory loss, memory change, memory impairment is not a normal feature of aging. There are certain things that happen normally as the brain ages. It gets less efficient. It doesn't process information quite as quickly as it used to. The brain never liked to multitask, even if you think it did when you were 25. It didn't. It likes it a whole lot less when you're 75. And then there's something that we call a tip of the tongue or a blocking phenomenon, which I'm sure everybody listening has probably experienced. What's the name of that actor?
Right.
Why did I come into the kitchen? And if the missing information comes back to you after a few minutes, a few hours, a few days, that's a perfectly normal part of cognitive aging.
So basically, at this point, I don't want to run out of time, and I want to get to this whole idea of your study. By the way, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with neurologist Dr. Amy Sanders. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease and a new study to evaluate treatments for the disease. What's going on, just briefly, as an overview in terms of treatment today?
So that's actually a relatively sad and stagnant topic. There has not been a new medication approved for the treatment of Alzheimer's disease since 2003. That's 12 long years. And even the medications that we do have are what we call symptom modifying, not disease modifying. In Alzheimer's disease, two proteins go wrong. They get managed wrong by the brain, they get folded wrong, and the mischief that they cause after they go wrong is what gives you Alzheimer's disease. And the two proteins are called amyloid and tau. And each is thought to be necessary, but not by itself sufficient to cause Alzheimer's disease. All of the medications that so far have been sent through the clinical trials pipeline to be an actual disease-modifying drug affecting the amyloid and tau pathologies all have focused on the amyloid path, the amyloid half of the equation. And the study that we're developing is, or the study that we'll be doing here, is focused on the tau half of the equation. So for that reason, it's very exciting to me.
Okay, so let's get right to what you're doing. There is a national study that's taking place that you will be a part of?
That's correct.
Tell us about it.
So the study is called the TCAD or NOBLE study, and it is a national study that will be recruiting 450 individuals across the United States at multiple sites. Upstate is one of those sites. It is evaluating the potential benefits of an investigational medicine called T817MA, which I will just refer to hereafter as the study medication.
Yeah.
And it may have the potential to modify the pace of the disease, so really truly to be a disease-modifying, not just a symptom-treating medication. The idea is that the study drug will help people who are currently suffering in the mild to moderate stages of Alzheimer's disease. It's a phase 2 clinical trial, and this means it's designed to find out if the study drug is safe and beneficial in delaying or alter the decline in memory that goes along with Alzheimer's disease.
So you're saying roughly 400 people. What are the age ranges that they're looking for, or in this idea of being mild to moderate? So what are the eligibility requirements?
So to be eligible for the study, you have to be between the ages of 55 and 85 when you enroll. So 55 is on the young side, but they are accepting people as young as 55. You must have a diagnosis of probable Alzheimer's disease that somebody has made, but the study investigators, as part of the screening process, will in effect confirm that diagnosis.
Based on behavioral and test, different types of
correct,
testing.
Correct, yes. People also must be on Aricept, which is one of the main medications that's used for Alzheimer's disease, so that over the course of the trial.
So basically, they'll be screened for eligibility. Age and ages don't, as you mentioned, and gender doesn't matter.
Gender does not matter.
Okay. Are there any other requirements to participate?
So one must have a study partner who is willing to come to all of the study visits with you.
And does the person have to live, independently, or in other words, can they live in an assisted living circumstance, or do they have to live
as long as they are still considered to be in the mild to moderate stages of the disease? There are no actual study rules about where people live. So if they live in an assisted living apartment and are able to get to the study and have a study partner, then they would be welcome as long as they're eligible on the other factors.
And where is this being done?
It's being done here at Upstate in our Institute for Human Performance, which is right on the Upstate campus. It's a lovely building with an attached parking garage. You don't even have to go outside after you park.
How many people are you looking for in your particular branch of the study?
We're hoping to recruit 10 to 15 individuals. And I won't lie to you, it's a substantial commitment. The study runs for a year, but the study designers recognize that they're asking people to commit to quite a bit, so there are some actual fairly substantial financial incentives to taking
part.
So
there are incentives.
Yes, there are.
Okay. And so people, just give us a little, in the very brief amount of time we have left, how frequently might they have to come? And when will they find out the results?
Over the course of the trial, they'll need to make visits to the study center every 4 to 6 weeks. And the trial runs for a little over a year. So,
and the hope is to find if something like this drug works, that you're really going to be modifying the disease itself.
That is the hope. And this is what we call a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. It has three patient groups, one of whom gets a sugar pill, but the other two groups each gets one, either a lower or a higher dose of the study medication. So the chances that someone who is enrolled will actually get the study medication are pretty good.
Well, I want to thank you for this information. I think there's, as you said, a great need for us to really start attacking the disease itself. And this sounds like a very good beginning.
I certainly hope so.
My guest has been Dr. Amy Sanders. She's assistant professor of neurology and the director of cognitive and behavioral neurology at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.